Maybe I confused things for you a bit, but it was the best I could do.
The rain on the pointed copper roof of the cupola made a loud, steady staccato beat, drumming into me acceptance, telling me time and again that deep inside me, I'd known all the time. Was it easy to shift time about Papa and make me forget even my right age?
Easy?
He asked hoarsely, rubbing at his tired eyes.
No, it wasn't easy. I did everything to erase time, to make it unimportant, because we lived so far from others I could fool you. I had all the newspapers stopped. The newspapers that came were old ones that I stuffed in the mailbox. I made you 2 years younger. I put away all the calendars and told your aunt not to let you look at her television set. I set all the clocks in this house so they told different times. We gave you tranquilizers for your headaches, and you thought it was only aspirin, so you slept often. Sometimes you woke up from a nap and you'd think it was a new day when only an hour had passed. You were confused and ready to believe anything I said that would give you peace. I made Vera swear she'd never tell you the truth, or she'd be punished so severely that she'd never want to look in a mirror again. And not one red cent would she inherit if she betrayed what I was doing. Your mother and your aunt held Tuesday tea times twice a week, so you'd think time really did move along swiftly. Always you kept asking what day it was, what week, what month, even what year. You wanted to know your age, why you didn't have birthday parties, why Vera didn't have them. We lied and told you anything to make you unaware of time. Then, a week later, we'd convince you months had passed. And in 17 months we convinced you there had been an older sister who died in the woods. That's all the time it took. And your aunt and your mother tutored you and kept you up with your schoolwork, though I'd told you you'd never been to school at all. It seemed safer that way. When you went back, we sent you to a new school where no one knew your history.
Tears were in my eyes. No first and best Adrina. Only me. Go on, Papa, I whispered, feeling very weak, very strange, riveting my eyes on him as if to pull every speck of truth from him while I had him. Telling it was like reliving it, and none of it was pleasant for him either.
Adrina, I lied and deceived only to spare you suffering. I would have told any lie, done anything to turn you back into that wonderfully self-confident, friendly girl who feared nothing. And if you wonder now about certain incidents you can't remember, remember you were suicidal, trying to destroy yourself. In my own way, I think I saved not only your life, but also your sanity.
My heart was pounding. Something was going on in my body, but the revelations coming at me like blows kept me asking questions when I should have guessed what was wrong. I had stood at the grave of the first and best Adrina, and I'd envied her because he'd loved her first and better than he'd ever loved me. I'd wanted to be her, just to have known that kind of love. It seemed wild and insane that I had been her all the time, the first, the best, not the second, the worst. Tears coursed down my cheeks as I crumpled to my knees where Papa could gather me into his arms. As if I were that ruined 9-year-old girl, he rocked me back and forth.
Don't cry, my darling. Don't cry. It's all over, and you're still the same sweet girl you always were. You're not changed. Nothing dirty can touch some people. You're that kind.
Still, up there in the cupola, I felt 9 years old again, ravished, degraded, and not quite human. Only then did I look toward the opening in the floor to see Vera standing there. Her dark, glittering eyes showed such hatred, such malice, that it made her lips quiver. Her strange orange hair seemed alive with electricity as she glared at me. Bits and pieces of the past began to flash behind my eyes. That look of envy on Vera's face, the way I'd felt when I thought about the first Adrina. Gladly Vera would see me dead, as I'd been glad the first Adrina was dead. Now I remembered my 9th birthday. I remembered that morning getting ready for school. I hadn't finished dressing. Vera and I used the same bathroom to bathe and dress for school. Vera kept glancing at me as I stepped from the tub.
Wear your prettiest petticoat today, Adrina, the one with the handmade lace and the little shamrocks that you love so much. Wear the matching panties, too.
No,
I'll put those things on after I come home. I hate school restrooms. I hate Mama forcing me to wear my best dress to school when all the girls will be jealous and hate me for doing it.
Oh, silly. It wasn't Mama's idea. It was mine. It's time the village girls know just what kind of beautiful clothes you have. She thought it was a wonderful idea to show them the White Fern girls still do wear silk dresses. And everything else.
On the porch, I stood and watched as Vera headed for where the school bus would pick her up. She twisted around and called back, "Enjoy your pedestal for one last time, Adrina, for when you come home, you're going to be just like the rest of us. Not so pure anymore." I jolted with that memory and stared at Vera with new awareness. No, I tried to convince myself. Vera wouldn't have set those boys on me. Would she? She was the only one who knew which paths I always used. There were many vague, meandering paths in our patch of woods that spread for hundreds of acres. It was those dark eyes that betrayed her, the cunning way she looked me up and down, smirking, laughing at me silently inside, as if she'd get the better of me no matter what I did. "It was you who set me up, wasn't it, Vera?" I asked, trying to keep my voice calm, my thoughts rational. "You hated me and envied me so much you wanted Papa to hate me, too." I cried with my head in Mama's lap, thinking something I'd done had made those ugly boys think I was wicked. I blamed myself for teasing them. I thought I'd done some innocent thing that gave them evil ideas when I couldn't remember anything I'd said or done to make them think I wasn't the nice kind of girl Papa wanted me to stay. It was you who told them which path I took. Despite myself, my voice was rising, taking on an accusatory tone. I stood, then took several steps closer to her.
"Oh, stop it," she yelled. "It's all over and done with, isn't it? How could I know you'd disobey and use the shortcut? It wasn't my fault. It was your own."
"Wait a minute,"
bellowed Papa, jumping to his feet and hurrying to my side, even as Arden came closer too.
"Many times I've overheard whispers in the village drugstore about someone in this house who betrayed my daughter. I thought it was the boy who used to trim our shrubs and mow our lawn. But of course it had to be you. He wasn't of this house or in this house. We bred a viper in our midst. Who else here would want Adrina harmed more than the unwanted child who didn't know who her father was?"
Appearing terrified, Vera backed away more.
"May your soul rot in everlasting hell,"
roared Papa, stepping forward threateningly as if he'd finish off Vera and she'd never breathe again.
"I thought at the time it was too much of a coincidence. On her birthday, but your mother kept saying you were innocent. Now I know. You arranged with those boys to have my Adrina raped."
Vera put her hand to her throat and tried with her broken arm to feel behind her. There was terror in her large dark eyes, so much like Papa's. She screamed at him,
"I'm your daughter and you know it.
Deny it all you want, Damien Adair, but I am like you. I'll do anything to get what I want, the same as you will. I hate you, Damien, really hate you. I hate that woman who bore me. I've hated every day I've lived in this hellhole you call White Fern. You gave my mother a check when she wanted to come to New York and be with me, and it was no good. A damned no-good check to pay for all those years when she was nothing but a slave in this house."
Papa took another threatening step closer to Vera.
"Don't you say one more word to me, girl, or you'll regret the day you were born. You've been nothing but a burr in my side since the day your mother brought you here. And you were the one who came and volunteered the information that Arden Lowe had been at the scene of my daughter's rape, and he had done nothing to save her. You laughed when you told me he'd run away. You gloated then, Vera. If you hadn't reminded me just now, I might have forgotten."
Papa's eyes narrowed dangerously. Like a tigress, Vera sprang forward to confront Papa, seeming to forget her broken arm, forgetting she was a woman and he was a huge, powerful man who could be merciless when it came to her.
"You," she spat. "What the hell do I care what you think? You gave me nothing after Adrina was born. You treated me as if I didn't exist once sweet Adrina came home from the hospital. I was shoved out of the pretty room you'd had fixed up for me, and it was turned into a nursery for her. It was sweet Adrina this, and sweet Adrina that, until I could have vomited. Not one kind word did you ever say to me. The only time you took notice of me was when I was sick or injured. I wanted you to love me, and you refused to love anyone but Adrina."
She sobbed then and hurried to press her face against Arden's chest.
"Take me away from here, Arden. Take me away. I want to feel loved. I'm not bad. I'm not really bad."
Papa roared then like a bull and charged. Screaming, Vera released Arden, wheeled around, and ran for the stairs. But she'd forgotten she wore those shoes with the lift and never should have run in those shoes. The built-up sole on her left shoe caused her ankle to turn over. She lost her balance and started to fall, and the opening of the spiraling stairs gaped like a huge square mouth behind her. Like a doll caught in a time-lapse film, she fell headlong down the spiraling stairs. Her screams ripped the air in short, horrible spurts. First, her shoulder struck against one side of the iron balustrade, then she ricocheted to strike the opposite side, turning over and over, striking again and again against the hard metal until her last scream was cut off in midair and she thudded to the bottom and just lay there. In a flash, Arden tore down the stairs to her side, kneeling there as Papa, Sylvia, and I hurried down too. She lay there, stunned, her dark eyes unfocused and already beginning to glaze as she stared toward Arden, who held her head on his lap.
"Take me away, Arden," she croaked in a small whisper. "Take me far from this place where everyone has always hated me. Take me from here, Arden. Take me."
She lapsed into unconsciousness then. Arden eased her head to the floor and, without a glance my way, raced to call an ambulance to rush Vera to the hospital. Again. Hours passed before I heard a faraway door bang shut, telling me Arden was back from the hospital emergency room. I dimmed the gas lamp by my bed and closed my eyes, hoping he'd go away and not bother me with tales of all Vera's broken bones that would heal. I was afraid to hear his sympathy for her, afraid he'd agreed to take her far from here. Like a child still afraid of total darkness, without some light, I felt defenseless. Yet total darkness was what I wanted when he came to me with his news. Softly, my bedroom door opened and closed. Arden's scent wafted to me.
"I've just spent some time with Damien, telling him about Vera. May I talk to you now about her?"
he asked, coming to perch on the side of my bed. His tired eyes moved my heart to compassion. Unwanted sympathy tried to steal my determination not to let him dissuade me from what I'd determined to do, what I had to do.
"No need to shrink away," he said with weary impatience. "I don't plan to touch you. Vera died about 2 hours ago. She had too many internal injuries to survive. Just about every bone in her body was broken."
I began to tremble. Some part of me had always strived to reach out to Vera and make her my sister.
"I know what you're feeling,"
said Arden wearily.
"Some part of us always seems diminished when someone dies. Vera gifted us with something before she died, Adrina. 3 deaths from accidental falls in this house caused the police to raise some eyebrows, and they were questioning me when Vera whispered she'd tripped and fallen, and it was her own fault."
I turned on my side, my back toward him, and began to quietly sob. In the darkness, I sensed he was starting to undress with the notion of holding me all night, but quickly I spoke. "No, Arden, I don't want you in my bed. Go to another room and sleep until I have time to think this out. If Vera said she was to blame for her fall, she was, wasn't she? Nobody pushed her. But it was she who pushed me. And as I think about it more and more, and remember the door that closed softly soon after I found my aunt dead, it had to be Vera who pushed her own mother down the stairs and took that blue check from the corkboard where I pinned it. And then there's Billy, who fell too. She and Papa might have married, and that would have given Papa another heir to his fortune, for all along she must have planned to do away with me." There was no answer from him, except when he closed the door. Only then did I get up and pull on a robe before I went to check on Sylvia, but she wasn't in her room. I found her in the playroom that had once been mine. Gently she was rocking to and fro, singing her strange little ditty. I knew that now as I looked around with new insight and recognized the dolls Papa had won at many a carnival from shooting the moving ducks. And all those stuffed, plushy animals, more prizes that he'd won for me. I stared at Sylvia's pretty young face, innocently singing like one of the witches from Papa's tales of his ancestors, those tales that had once made me shout a witch's curse to stop boys who weren't afraid. Little dolls appeared in Sylvia's hands, apparently taken from the pockets of her loose garment, tiny dolls I myself had bought to please her, neutered dolls of no sex, but somehow they seemed more boyish than girlish. Arden had come in behind me and stood there watching. Sylvia hung back, staring at us, then slowly shuffled out of the room.
"Sit down,"
Arden growled, pulling me into the playroom and shoving me into the rocking chair. He went down on his knees beside me and tried to capture my hand. I sat on them to keep them from him. He sighed, and I thought of Billy and all the little hints she'd tried to give me to tell me her son wasn't perfect. But I'd wanted him perfect. Perhaps that was in my eyes as I glared at him and accused him now, outraged and devastated at how he'd failed me when I needed him most. Sadness and guilt shone in his eyes, so that I could almost read his thoughts. He put up with so much from me to make up for that shameful day. Even now I loved him, even as I scorned his weakness.
"This is the moment I've dreaded since that day of your 9th birthday. I was hurrying home, planning to race on to your house and be there for your party. I'd never been inside Whitefern, and it was a big day for me. On the way through the woods to the cottage, 3 boys hailed me and told me to hang around and enjoy some fun. I didn't know what they meant. Time, what I had of it, was spent working, and having fun with older boys was something I'd never done. It pleased me that finally I was being invited to be one of them, so I joined them when they told me to crouch down behind the bushes. Then you came skipping along the dirt path, singing to yourself. No one said a word. When they jumped out and ran to catch you, and I heard them yell out all they planned to do to you, it was like a nightmare. My legs and arms went numb. I didn't know what to do to stop them. I felt sick with fear for you and weak with hatred for them, and I couldn't move. Adrina, I forced myself to stand up, and you saw me. You pleaded with me with your eyes, with your screams before they stuffed something into your mouth. And shame for being paralyzed made me even weaker. I knew you'd despise me for doing nothing, as I still despise myself for doing nothing but running for help. That's why I ran, for I didn't stand a chance of winning in a fight against them. 1-1 I might have had a chance, but 3. Adrina, I'm sorry. It's not enough to say, I know that. Now I wish I'd stayed and tried to defend you, and then you wouldn't be staring at me now with so much scorn on your face and in your eyes.
He paused and reached to gather me into his arms, and with his kisses perhaps he thought he could build another fire like he had in the graveyard, and I'd be his again, and forgiving.
Forgive me for failing you then, Adrina. Forgive me for failing you every time you've needed me. Give me another chance, and you'll never need to forgive me for failing to act when I should.
Forgive him? How could I forgive him when I could never forget? 2 times he did nothing to save me from people who wanted me destroyed. I didn't want to give him a 3rd chance. The Last Spin of the Web. On a fine sunny day, we laid Vera to rest beside Aunt Elsbeth. Strange that I'd be at this funeral when I'd missed Aunt Elsbeth's and Billy's. I had loved those other two, yet it was Vera's coffin that I saw lowered into the ground. As I said goodbye to Vera, I understood her. Maybe in understanding someday I'd forgive her and remember only the moments of love I had for her. We came home from the funeral, and immediately after I helped Sylvia out of her funeral garb, Papa suggested a game of ball in the yard would help us overcome the depression that seemed to lay on us like a thick blanket of fog. Oppressive. Gloomy. I had hardly spoken to Arden since the night Vera died, and now, 3 days later, I made my plans while Papa sprawled in a chair across from mine and tried, as always, to discover my innermost secrets. When Sylvia entered the foyer trailed by Arden, her shuffling gait seemed much improved. Fresh air and sunshine were giving her a bit of color, and those lovely aqua eyes scanned to find me before she smiled. I left before Arden had the chance to appeal to me again and hurried up the stairs. In my bedroom, I sat on my bed, trying to think ahead so I could do the right thing for myself and for Sylvia. Papa came to the door and stood there, pleading for me not to leave him. Could he read my mind?
You promised, Adrina. You promised. All your life you've sworn you'd stay with me. And what about Sylvia? Are you going to set her back and take from her the one person who stood by her?
I'm going, Papa, I said tiredly. I promised not to leave you when I was a child and didn't understand what you wanted from me. But I can't stay. There's something wrong in this house. Something rules here that keeps everyone from being normal or happy. I want out.
Think of Sylvia,
cried Papa.
Though she's better, she'll never speak with confidence or fluency. She'll never be normal enough to perform any difficult mental tasks. How is she going to survive if I die?
I didn't plan to leave Sylvia here, but I didn't want to tell him that. Not yet.
How will Sylvia survive when you're gone?
His dark Arab eyes sparkled with what I took for cunning.
And so you did lose the gift after all. They killed that specialness in you, that ability to love selflessly, the sensitivity that would always call you when someone needed you. You are no longer that special girl with the rare and precious gift.
I said with hard scorn, There is no gift, Papa. I don't believe you anymore, Papa. It's the process of sitting and rocking and sort of hypnotizing yourself into believing anything. I pity the girl I used to be for believing so wholeheartedly in you.
All right,
he said. Another of those long, penetrating looks he gave me, forcing me to cast my eyes downward. Then he got up to leave, staring at me from the doorway with such sadness I had to turn my back so I wouldn't yield to his unspoken pressure. Now it was even clearer. I had to leave this place. He left and slammed the door shut behind him. I fell on my bed and stared at the ceiling. To sleep, I thought, never to dream again. That's the way I wanted it to be. I didn't need Arden now. I had Sylvia, and that was going to be enough. Yet all night long, Arden flitted in and out of my nightmares, so that in the morning, I woke up fuzzy-headed, thick-tongued. At the breakfast table, Papa didn't speak. Usually he entered the kitchen talking and went out the same way. No talent but for running his mouth all day long, I heard my mother's ghostly whisper say. Most of the time he was full of good spirits, always undaunted by tragedy, always a winner. But I had managed to bring him low. Finally, he spoke as Sylvia shoved food into her mouth, and Arden ate silently without appetite.
Vera must have been there the night Ellie and I had our last argument. It was Vera who dressed her in that traveling suit, and Vera who threw those clothes into the suitcase to make us think Ellie planned to leave me.
His head bowed down into his hands, and for a moment, his wide shoulders drooped, as if tragedy could touch him after all.
I knew Ellie would never leave me. I could have given her $1 million, and still she would have stayed on. To live for years in one place puts roots deep into the ground, even when you don't want that to happen. One day Ellie would tell me she'd be happier somewhere else, but whenever she tried to leave, she found she couldn't. She used to say she made the biggest mistake of her life when she came back here.
He didn't look my way again, but I knew what he was trying to do. Brainwash me into thinking I couldn't exist outside of this house, away from his tender, loving care. Telling me how he needed and wanted me to stay on, without saying it directly. The many clocks in the house ticked away the time, each clock face now synchronized with all the others. The kitchen faucet drip-dropped, drop-dripped. Sylvia finished eating and took out her prisms, and the colors flashed, and the chimes in the cupola began to tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. I shook my head, to rid it of the mesmerizing spell being cast, not only by the colors, but also by the familiar sounds. Papa had ruined my life by considering me a weakling unable to cope with the truth, when it was he who wasn't able to cope. He'd lied to brainwash himself as much as me. And he'd ruined Vera's life as well by disliking her from the beginning because she filled him with guilt every time he looked at her black, conniving eyes so much like his own. But I was going to prove to him what I was made of. In this house, I still clung to the shadows near the walls and still avoided the colorful patterns on the floor, still a child arrested at the age of 9. I'd prove to Papa and to Arden that I could yank up my roots no matter how much it hurt, and from this house I'd flee. I forced myself to pull the suitcases from the closet shelves, and with mad determination I began to run about, flinging garments into the bags open on my bed. I didn't fold anything neatly, just hurled in sweaters, skirts, blouses, and I packed for Sylvia, too. Heedlessly, I threw in my underwear, stuffed in stockings, shoes, handbags, cosmetics, just like Aunt Elsbeth had done. The clock on my night table read 10 after 10, and I set my watch by that. By noon, I'd be on my way with Sylvia.
"Adrina,"
said Arden, coming into my room to stand close at my side, his arms trying to enfold me.
"Don't turn from me."
He pulled me against his chest and tried to put his lips on mine. I moved my head to avoid his kiss.
"I love you,"
he said fervently.
"I've always loved you. Terrible things. Worse things happen to many people, and still they stay together. They find happiness again. Help yourself, Adrina. Be brave. Help me. Help Sylvia."
But I didn't want to help anyone if it meant staying on. I didn't need Arden now. He'd failed me twice, and it stood to reason he'd fail me a third time and would perhaps always fail me when I needed him most. Sobbing, I jerked free of his arms and pushed him away. "I'm leaving you, Arden. I think you are no better than Papa. Both of you should have known better than to try to base my life on lies." No words from him this time. Nothing to say as he watched me finish packing. One suitcase full, I struggled to close and lock it. A bit of blouse sleeve showed, but I didn't care. Arden did nothing to help me as I bore down with all my strength, trying to force it to close. Finally, I had it locked. I locked all my bags, 5 of them. Arden sighed heavily.
"So now you plan to run off to God knows where. You don't ask me what I want. You don't care what I want. You won't listen to reason or explanations. Do you call that justice? Or do you call it spite? Or revenge? Your love is a capricious thing, Adrina. Don't you owe it to me to stay and see if our marriage can't be salvaged?"
I didn't look his way. "I can't let Sylvia stay here. There's something strange in this house that holds all memories and makes them part of the future. This house contains too many sorrows to ever let any of us have any joy. Be glad I'm leaving you. Tell yourself each day of your life that you escaped by the skin of your teeth from becoming exactly what my father is. A fraud. A cheat out to steal even from his own daughters." He gave me a long, hard look, turned from me, and stalked to the door. From there, he had to say one last painful thing.
"I could say right now that Damien did try to help you, but I guess it's too late to say that."
I picked up an expensive paperweight and hurled it at his head. It missed and fell to the floor. He slammed out of the bedroom door. Minutes later, the door opened slowly. Quietly, on pokey pussycat feet, Sylvia stepped inside the room and stood silently watching me. "Yes, Sylvia, I'm leaving, and taking you with me. I've packed your clothes, and I will buy you new, pretty clothes when we get to where we're going. This is not a healthy house for you to live out your life in. I want to give you school days, parks to play in, friends your own age. Mama left us both a share of this house, so if ever we wanted to leave, Papa would have to give us our share or sell the house. So let's happily say goodbye to Whitefern and hello to much better lives elsewhere." Her aqua eyes widened as she inched away from me. Violently, she shook her head. "No," she breathed, putting up her hands as if to ward off an enemy. Stay here. Home." Again, I spoke to her about leaving with me, and just as violently as before, she told me in all ways possible without speaking that she would never, never leave Papa or Whitefern. I backed away this time. I wouldn't let her devotion to Papa undermine my determination to go my own way for the first time in my life. Let her stay on with Papa in Whitefern. Perhaps they deserved one another, too. "Goodbye, Papa," I said an hour later. "Take good care of yourself. Sylvia is going to need you even more after I'm gone." Tears coursed down his full cheeks and fell onto his clean shirt. Papa's voice followed me as I moved toward the door. I carried only one small bag. I'd come back for the others.
All I ever wanted out of life was one woman to see me as fine and noble. I thought it would be you. Adrina, don't go. I'll give you all I possess. Everything.
You have Sylvia, Papa, I answered with a tight smile. Just remember this when I'm gone from this house. You made Vera what she was, as you made me what I am, as you've also shaped Sylvia's destiny. Be kind to her, Papa. Be careful what trail you put her feet upon when you begin to tell her tales. I'm not truly convinced. Here, I bit down on my tongue, hesitating when I saw that Sylvia had come to pause in the foyer just outside the Roman Revival Salon. Terror lit up Papa's dark eyes for a brief second, as if he knew Sylvia mimicked me just once too often and rocked in that chair many more times than I would let him force me. Now she had the gift, whatever it might be, and if it could be. I'm going to drive your Mercedes, Papa. I hope that's all right. Numbly, he nodded.
Cars mean nothing to me now,
he mumbled.
My life is finished when you go.
He stared over my shoulder at Sylvia, who came to stand in the doorway. Something in her now formidable stance reminded me of Aunt Elsbeth. There was a hint of Mama in her faint, sardonic smile. Oh, my God. My head began to ache, as I feared it would always ache in this house of spindles, bobbins, and knobs, with its gold and brass gleaming, with its myriad colors confusing my thoughts and taking me away from other much more important things. We were all a strange lot, the White Fern girls, daring to be different in the oddest ways. Words I'd heard Aunt Elsbeth say to Mama and to that portrait of Aunt Mercy Marie that had made Tuesday tea times a memorial service not to be enjoyed. As I prepared to leave Arden and never see him again, Papa was pleading with his dark, dark eyes, even as he tried to deny Sylvia the right to take my place. Let him suffer the consequences of making her what she is, and God alone knew if it was Vera or Sylvia who hated Papa more. I suspected Sylvia would destroy any woman but me who came into Papa's life when I left, if ever he wanted another woman. Good luck and goodbye, Sylvia. If ever you need me, I'll come to take you home with me, wherever my home may be. Again, I nodded to Papa, who sat on, glumly grim. I refused to look at Arden, who came down the stairs, dressed and ready to leave for his office. I thanked Sylvia again for being there when I needed her. Some kind of strange wisdom was in her eyes as she nodded without trying to speak. Then she turned and nailed Papa to his chair with her penetrating stare. I shivered with the suspicion that Papa was not going to enjoy his youngest daughter who, with the flashing prism lights, controlled the destinies of those who tried to dominate too much. With great reluctance, his face showing his misery, Arden carried my bags to the car and carefully stacked them in the trunk while I sat behind the wheel and prepared to go. Goodbye, Arden. I'll never forget all the fun we used to have when I believed you loved me. Even if I didn't respond sexually the way you wanted all the time, I loved you in my own way. He winced from the pain of my casual parting before he said bitterly,
You'll come back. You think you can say goodbye to me, to White Fern, to Sylvia, and to your father, but you'll come back.
My hands gripped the steering wheel more forcefully, thinking that this was Papa's last and most expensive gift to me. I looked around to see the three-day storm was over and the sky was washed clean and bright. All the world seemed to smell new, fresh, inviting. I breathed deeply and felt suddenly very happy. Free. At last. Free. Free of that stale wedding cake house with its cupola empty of the bride and groom. It was the dimness inside that house that made the colors too dominating. Someplace far from here, I could make it on my own and become a real kind of person who knew what she was. What commanded me against my will to turn my head and have second thoughts about leaving? I didn't want to stay. Slowly, slowly, my head was forced to turn so that soon I was facing the house. My eyes lifted to that window on the second floor, That room I'd always presumed was her room, and through the cloudy glass I saw a pale small face staring out, a face that looked so much like my own, I gasped. Framed in a mop of thick hair of an uncertain color that could change and blend with its surroundings, her wan face neared, retreated. I could see that her lips were moving, saying something, perhaps singing the playroom song. My hand shook when I looked away and tried to turn the ignition key. What was wrong with my hand? I couldn't make it obey. No! I screamed mentally, while Arden stared at me as if I were crazy. Don't, Sylvia. Let me go. I did the best I could for you, gave you years and years of my life. Years and years. Give me the chance to live and find myself, please. Louder sounded the wind chimes, clamoring, making my head ache so badly I wanted to scream. Scream! But I had no voice. Behind my eyes a premonition flashed. Something awful was going to happen to Papa. When it did, they'd put Sylvia away, and never would she see the sunlight again. I let go the ignition key and opened the car door, then stepped out and hurried to Arden, whose eyes lit up as he held out his arms to embrace me. With a sob, his face bowed into my hair as my arms held him just as tightly as he held me. We looked deeply into each other's eyes. Then together, we tugged my suitcases from the trunk of the Mercedes. My suitcases we left on the drive. Like Papa's love for me, I'd just done the most noble deed of my life. I was the first and best Adrina who had always put love and loyalty first. There was no place for me to run. Shrugging, feeling sad, yet cleaner than I had since that rainy day in the woods, I felt a certain kind of accepting peace as Arden put his arm about my shoulders. Automatically, my arm encircled his waist, and together we headed back to the porch, where Papa and Sylvia had come out to watch. I saw happiness and relief in both pairs of eyes. Arden and I would begin again in Whitefern, and if this time we failed, we'd begin a third time, a fourth.
My Sweet Audrina was written by V.C. Andrews and read by Rebecca Ross. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, Technical Director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Ashley Lehman. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Also by V.C. Andrews from Simon & Schuster Audio, Sage's Eyes, read by Rebecca Ross. My Sweet Audrina is available in print from Simon Pulse.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.